Good day. This is Kim Harden, and I am reading the News Gazette for Wednesday, May 13th, 2026. Thought we would start with the weather first, let you know what to expect today and a little bit this week. Today, high of 67, mostly sunny. Northwest winds, 15 to 20 miles an hour with gusts up to 30. Overnight, mostly clear. North winds, 10 to 15 with gusts up to 30, diminishing to around 5. Tomorrow will be sunny. High of 70, low of 43. Mostly cloudy with a chance of showers. Friday, high of 78, low of 52. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers in the morning. Then mostly sunny and breezy. Saturday, looking forward to 86 degrees and a low of 60. Partly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. And moving to Sunday, 84 and 63, partly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers. And it's getting every day sunrise a little earlier, sunset a little later. Today, sunrise was at 5:39 by Friday, or by Sunday, that will be 5:36 a.m. And sunset today is 8 o'clock, and on Sunday, that will be 84. So enjoy this beautiful week. And as you know, it is graduation season in the Champaign-Urbana area. Well, everywhere, actually. There's a huge picture on the front page. U of I students, three young ladies with orange, with their sashes on, taking a look at a camera of a young man who is showing them the pictures that he's taking for their graduation outside of Weimer Hall on Tuesday afternoon. The women are ready for Saturday's commencement ceremony, which will feature keynote speaker Sean Evans, host of the hit YouTube series Hot Ones, at Gies Memorial Stadium. A feature on the front page, a weekly feature, episode 72, as heard on News Gazette Radio, which airs from 4 to 5 Monday through Thursday on WDWS 1400 AM and streams on newsgazette.com. The first quick story is, and the winner of the 2026 Lullier Spirit Award is none other than Lauren Tate. University of Illinois Alumni Association President David Bambry announced on Tuesday's edition of News Gazette Radio, powered by GTPS Insurance. The award has been presented every homecoming weekend since 1998 to an alum who demonstrates the same extraordinary spirit and pride in support of the university that Lullier, Class of 62, has. The News Gazette Hall of Famer, who will mark 60 years on the Illini beat next year, exemplifies what this award is about, Bambry said, calling it an incredibly well-deserved and long-overdue honor. Up next, Urbana's new fire chief learned a thing or two about leadership growing up, the son of the longtime police chief in the Vermilion County village of Westville. I would say that we are very similar, pretty easygoing, we are calm, cool, collected. Try not to show any emotion, Steve Doggett Jr. said. I've been compared to him several times by the people I used to work with. Doggett's appointment as fire chief was made official this week, with Mayor Deshaun Williams saying of his pick to succeed Damon Dade, I have seen firsthand the respect the rank and file have for him, and that respect speaks volumes about the kind of leader he is. The one-time Westville police officer and firefighter's other familial claim to fame, he's the proud dad of Westville High junior outside hitter Matty Doggett, who in December was named to the News Gazette All-Area Volleyball First Team. And finally, Jeff Delisio writes about, no, last week's declassification of documents related to UFO reports did not convince U of I astronomy professor Leslie Looney that extraterrestrials are zipping across the nighttime sky in spaceships. People see things that they can't identify all the time. The modern skies are full of drones, classified aerospace things, balloons, satellites, weirdness in the center's atmospheric effects, whatever, he said. Among the claims over the years was one on May 9, 1971, when an Indiana man visiting the U of I-operated Vermilion River Observatory in Danville reported a mysterious object that suddenly began making a loud noise as soon as he went to snap a photo of it. Typical sighting you might expect, Looney said. A single person out late at night saw a spinning craft and had a Polaroid camera with them. I actually believe in aliens. I think aliens exist. I just don't think UFOs or UAPs, as we now call them, are associated with them at all. A story by Jana Wiersema, a position proposed to focus on issues like homelessness. As local governments and organizations continue various efforts to address homelessness and housing insecurity, the City of Champaign is considering creating a position dedicated to these issues. The proposal to create a 3-year full-time position for a homelessness and community services manager within the city manager's office was included in a recent report to the Champaign City Council on budget request recommendations for fiscal year 2026 through 27. According to Deputy City Manager Nancy Rabel, the idea for this position arose as the city conducted research and stakeholder engagement as part of its efforts to develop a homelessness prevention blueprint. Staff consulted with various municipalities across the state and county to better understand their approaches to addressing homelessness, Rabel said. A common theme among them was the presence of a dedicated leadership position responsible for coordinating and overseeing their local response. The importance of such a role was further reinforced in discussions with Christine Haley, Illinois Chief Homelessness Officer, during her visit to Champaign last year. Proposed duties for the Homelessness and Community Services Manager include leading implementation of the blueprint once it's complete. The recommendation to create this position will increase one-time expenditures in the general fund by $399,464. Financial Services Manager and Budget Officer Chris Pendle wrote in a report to the Council. This cost includes funding for the position for all 3 years. Rabel said that making the proposed position temporary allows for flexibility. Because this role supports the implementation of the Homelessness Prevention Blueprint, a new city effort, the scope and workload may evolve as the project develops, she explained. A temporary position allows the city to assess progress, make adjustments to responsibilities as needed, and ensure the position remains aligned with program goals. She added that staff will provide more information on the proposed position during a presentation at the Council's May 26th study session. The City Council is expected to vote on budget adoption on June 16th, Pendle wrote. $6.15 million to strides in 4 years. The budgeting process is also likely to include more discussions regarding Strides, the City of Champaign Township's low-barrier homeless shelter. The City Council, which also doubles as the town board, voted last week to grant an additional $350,000 from the city's general fund balance to the shelter, enabling it to stay open through June 30th. Strides was created with American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, funding, and trying to find a more permanent source of funding has proved to be a challenge for local officials over the past couple of years. The city initially provided the township with $3.9 million in ARPA funds for the shelter in 2022, Neighborhood Services Director Rob Kowalski wrote in a report to the council. The agreement between the township and the city was later amended by council members in July 2024 to include an additional $1.9 million in ARPA funding, which has been generally designated for housing insecurity, to help keep the shelter open. In total, the amendment would provide for $6,150,000 of funding for Strides since the beginning of the original agreement, the original $5.8 million plus the newly proposed $350,000, with an agreement ending date of June 30, 2026, Kowalski wrote. Township Supervisor Charlene Murray said New Strides Executive Director Jasmine Hernandez have done an excellent job of reworking Strides, said Champaign Mayor Doug Finan, who is also a town board member. They are adding accountability, not only for the residents, but also for the tax dollars that are being spent there, Finan told the News Gazette, adding that she hasn't heard any complaints about the shelter in several months. Strategic planning. In discussing the shelter's future, she said that the next steps will likely be informed by both the city's homelessness prevention blueprint and similar efforts by the Champaign County Continuum of Service Providers to the Homeless, CSPH. What we are trying to do is get all of that information and figure out the best ways for the city to intervene, Finan said. And it may be that our piece is continuing to help with Strides, or it may be that Strides spins off into something else and that city is funding another piece. But until we have all of that information from both entities, it's hard to know exactly where we're going to land. I think Strides will, in some form, continue to be needed. She added that if the shelter remains in its current location, the building will require some upgrades, in her opinion. The Cunningham Township Supervisor's Office is the fiscal sponsor of CSPH's efforts to create a comprehensive community-led strategic plan to end homelessness in Champaign County. CSPH Chair and Cunningham Township Supervisor Danielle Chenoweth wrote in a memo to the Cunningham Township Board. CSPH was able to hire national consultant Homebase for the project due to support from the State of Illinois and Illinois Department of Human Services Office to present and end homelessness. The Continuum said in March that the plan is to forge a community-wide plan to achieve functional zero homelessness by 2028. CSPH expects to share the plan in a June 29th presentation, Chenoweth wrote. Temporary shelter ending. Meanwhile, Cunningham Township's temporary winter emergency shelter for men and male-identified residents is set to close May 23rd as both its occupancy permit and funding come to an end, she said. The program has leased space in the former Illinois National Guard Armory at 109 East Park Street in Champaign. The shelter was funded through one-time funds from the state of Illinois, supplemented by funds from the city of Urbana and private donations, Chenoweth wrote. After 3 years of state funding from different sources, we have been told there will be no specific winter shelter funding from the state next year. In addition to providing shelter at night, the temporary program also provides a light dinner, a hot breakfast, case management on Monday and Thursday mornings, and opportunities for guests to connect with medical and mental health providers. The shelter has been staffed and operated by local nonprofit Friend in Me. Thanks to the skillful work of our partners at Friend in Me, we had no neighbor complaints and almost no incidents requiring police presence the entire winter, Chenoweth told the News Gazette. She also shared that the town board has approved an approximately $418,000 grant from the Housing Authority of Champaign County, which will largely be used to provide transitional housing for 11 months for 20 men in our shelter. From November 23, 2025 to March 31, 2026, 186 men had spent at least one night in the shelter, which saw an average of 45 to 65 per night. The most served at one time has been 82. 72 men said that they had a disabling condition, and 22 said that medical fragility had been an obstacle in their search for housing. Another local project aims to create tiny homes specifically to house medically fragile individuals struggling with homelessness. Hope Village is still under construction on farmland just south of Federal Drive in Urbana. Project partners include Carl Health, Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, and the University of Illinois. The work has received funding from the State of Illinois, the City of Urbana, the Local Housing and Homeless Innovations Grant Program, and the Housing Authority of Champaign County. Hope Village officials declined to comment on the progress of the project. More than just a physical space. Additionally, a new mid-barrier shelter by CU at Home near the corner of Sangamon Drive and South Mattis Avenue in Champaign is up and running. The facility has 16 beds for men and 10 for women. The site also includes offices for staff who began moving in late February, said Executive Director Melissa Courtwright. Clients began moving in on March 2nd on a staggered basis. The facility has served 23 unique individuals since then. The 12 to 18 month program includes 24/7 housing support, case management, life skills development, laundry facilities, kitchen access, recovery support, and programming designed to help individuals move toward long-term stability, said Courtwright. This building represents more than just a physical space. It represents a community that believes people can heal, grow, and build stable futures when they are given meaningful support and opportunity, she said. We are thankful to everyone who helped make this vision possible. Top of the morning to you. Something to get you going, courtesy Vice President Jim Rossell. On Wednesdays, we'll chop it up with our Golfer of the Week. Email your nominations to jrossow@newsgazette.com. Garrett Cox celebrated his return to Lake of the Woods golf course by teaming with Lyle Burns to win last month's Ben Sieg two-person season opener tournament, a member of Mohammed Seymour's state championship golf team in 2010. The 31-year-old Cox moved to Charlotte, North Carolina 8 years ago. He usually comes home for a Mohammed Seymour fundraiser each July, but with his wife Amanda expecting the couple's first child in August, it's a girl, by the way, he likely will miss the event this summer. "I love going back there," said Cox, a sales rep for TaylorMade Golf. "Lyle's my best friend, and it was cool to team up with him and spend the weekend with his family." Here's more. Best memory of the state title season. Coach Nathan Mills used to drive our short minibus, and we'd all be singing or rapping songs after each tournament. "Where is your IHSA medal?" "My mom made a shadow box with it and a photo of me in the leaderboard. It's in my attic. It might be time to move it to my office." Favorite golf movie? Happy Gilmore. "What's your order on the 19th hole?" "Guinness." "What's your go-to club?" TaylorMade 5-wood. Favorite course? Pinehurst No. 2 in North Carolina. Low round, 65 at Lake of the Woods. Pro I always root for? Rory McIlroy. Luke Taylor writes about court hearings. Rantoul man charged over alleged threats. In Urbana, a Rantoul man has been charged with 3 counts of aggravated assault after he allegedly threatened the mother of his neighbor when she visited over the last few months. Troy Stewart, 30, was also charged with unlawful possession of a weapon by a repeat felon offender and unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon on parole. Assistant State's Attorney Rachel Bierman said that Stewart lives in a heavily populated residential area of Rantoul and that the reporting person lives across the street from him. The reporting person is not the victim, but the victim's child. Neither the victim nor the witness are familiar with Stewart other than they recognized him by sight, Bierman said, but the victim did not make a report earlier because she was afraid of him. The first of multiple alleged incidents of threats occurred sometime between January and March of this year when the victim came over to visit her daughter. She parked her car in the driveway, and allegedly Stewart approached her with his hand on the handle of a handgun sticking out of his waistband. He said, "I'm ready to take out whoever," Bierman said. There was a second similar incident sometime around March or April of this year. The third incident, which most directly led to Stewart's arrest, occurred on Sunday. The victim was once again visiting her daughter, and as she approached the door, Stewart allegedly emerged from a nearby building with a handgun pointing at her. Bierman said he asked, "Who is you? Who is you?" and activated a laser sight on his handgun, which he directed at the victim's body until she raised her hands and explained she was visiting her daughter. On Monday, police were surveilling the area while they prepared to obtain a search warrant, and a Rantoul officer observed Stewart and a friend exiting an apartment. The officer reportedly watched the defendant remove a handgun from his waistband, eject the cartridge, and hand it to his friend. She was able to record this happening on a cell phone. Police later executed the search warrant and found a .40 caliber handgun with no serial number. Champaign County Judge Brett Olmstead ruled that Stewart would be detained at least through Wednesday morning, when there would be a hearing on if he will continue to be detained until the resolution of his case. If convicted of the charge of unlawful possession of a weapon by a repeat felony offender, Stewart could be facing up to 30 years in prison. Turning now to national and world news, Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge ship operator employee charged in 2024 collision. Prosecutors announced criminal charges Tuesday in the deadly 2024 collapse of Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge, accusing a Singapore-based ship operator of intentionally relying on an improper fuel pump that contributed to the ruinous crash and then lying about it to investigators. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche called it a preventable tragedy of enormous consequence. The indictment names Synergy Marine PTE Limited, based in Singapore, and Synergy Maritime PTE Limited, based in Chennai, India. Radhakrishna Karthik Nair, 47, an Indian national who was technical superintendent for the Dali container ship, was also charged. Synergy Marine expressed disappointment and accused the U.S. Justice Department of turning an accident into a crime. This was a maritime casualty that should be assessed through the full factual, technical, and regulatory record rather than through selective mischaracterizations in a criminal indictment. Synergy will vigorously defend itself against these inaccurate allegations, the company said. Nair's lawyer, David Gerger, had a similar response, saying his client thinks about this accident every day, but he certainly did not cause it. The Dali, bound for Sri Lanka, lost power twice in a four-minute span as it moved to sea from the port of Baltimore, causing it to crash into the Key Bridge in the early hours of March 26, 2024. Investigators say a loose wire in a switchboard likely caused the first power loss that led to its steering failure. After regaining power, the ship found itself in trouble again. The Dali turned to a certain pump for supply fuel to two generators, but the pump was not designed to automatically restart after the first blackout, so a second blackout occurred, the indictment says. If the Dali had used the proper fuel pumps, according to the indictment, the vessel would have regained power in time to safely get under the bridge. Instead, it crashed into a supporting column of the bridge, killing six construction workers who had been filling potholes. As alleged, the bridge was struck and collapsed because those who were responsible for the ship's operation deliberately cut corners at the expense of safety, said Jimmy Paul, head of the FBI's Baltimore office. The government alleges that the same problem occurred with the same type of pump on two of the Dali's sister ships. The companies and Nair are charged with conspiracy misconduct causing death, failing to immediately inform the U.S. Coast Guard of a hazardous condition, obstructing the National Transportation Safety Board, and making false statements. Workers continue repairs on the Francis Scott Key Bridge, including demolition of the old structure and planning construction of a new, taller, stronger cable stayed bridge. From the AP Wire in Fort Collins, Colorado, at the Denver International Airport, security missed suicidal intruder. Workers at Denver Airport initially missed a security breach by a man who scaled an 8-foot perimeter fence and crossed a runway, where he was hit and killed in a fiery collision by a plane with 231 people on board, authorities said Tuesday. The runway fatality underscores the long-standing challenge of keeping intruders out of major airports. Denver International Airport sprawls across 53 square miles, twice the size of Manhattan, on an open prairie northeast of the city center. The 41-year-old trespasser triggered an alarm as he crossed into the airport in a remote area about 2 miles from the terminal late Friday night, but security personnel mistakenly attributed that alarm to a herd of deer that was nearby. Authorities said the man died by suicide. However, no note from the victim was immediately recovered. The manner of death was determined based on the investigation at the scene, a records review and a postmortem examination, said Sterling McLaren, chief medical examiner for the city and County of Denver. The collision involving the Frontier Airlines plane as it was taking off for Los Angeles sparked an engine fire that forced passengers to evacuate via slides. 12 people sustained minor injuries and 5 were taken to the hospitals. AP story from New York. In the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, Trump spared $83 million payout until a high court decides. President Donald Trump won't have to pay an $83 million defamation award to a longtime advice columnist until the U.S. Supreme Court gets a chance to review the case or reject an appeal, according to a court entry Tuesday. The Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals agreed to a request by one of Trump's lawyers that it let the president delay the payment to E. Jean Carroll, though it required that Trump post a $7.4 million bond to cover any additional interest costs, a request Carroll's attorney has made. The appeals court late last month refused Trump's request for a rare meeting of the full Second Circuit to hear an appeal of a 3-judge panel's affirmance of the January 2024 verdict. Afterward, Trump attorney Justin D. Smith asked the Second Circuit to stay the effect of its decision upholding the award so that Trump would not be forced to pay the judgment before the high court had a chance to consider an appeal. Smith said last week there was a fair prospect that the Supreme Court will find in favor of Trump, who has called Carroll's claim first made publicly in 2019 that she was sexually attacked by Trump in a Manhattan luxury department store dressing room in the spring of 1996, a made-up scam. The $83 million award to Carol, 82 years old, came from a jury that briefly heard Trump testify and observed his animated behavior for several days. In upholding the verdict, a Second Circuit panel wrote last September that Trump continued his attacks against Carol for at least 5 years, making them more extreme and frequent as the trial approached. He also continued these same attacks during the trial itself, the appeals court said. In one such statement issued 2 days into the trial, Trump proclaimed that he would continue to defame Carol 1,000 times. The jury had been instructed to accept the findings of a jury that in May 2023 awarded Carol $5 million after concluding Trump sexually abused her in the department store, then defamed her after she published her account of it in a 2019 memoir. Trump is challenging the $83 million award on several grounds, asserting absolute immunity for comments he made while president, as he disavowed knowing Carol was a Carol and attacked her motivation, saying they were politically driven or arose from a desire to promote her memoir. Maggie Daugherty writes for Capital News in Illinois, Pritzker urges feds to release $1 billion in broadband funds to the state. In Chicago, Governor J.B. Pritzker sent a letter to U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick on Tuesday, urging him to approve Illinois' proposal for federal broadband infrastructure funds. The $1 billion proposal would connect roughly 383,000 people, mostly in rural areas, to high-speed internet. However, Illinois and California lag months behind other states in the approval process, leading to speculation that the funds have been withheld from the two blue states for political punishment or leverage. Those funds were previously allocated to states in 2023 under the $42.5 billion Broadband Equity, Access, and Deployment, or BEAD, program established by the Biden administration's bipartisan infrastructure law passed by Congress in 2021. To receive funding, states were required to submit a 5-year plan and proposal identifying under and unserved communities, solicit feedback from the public, and then file for final approval. But midway through the process, Lutnick announced that the Commerce Department would review the program, which he claimed had not connected a single person to the internet due to woke mandates, favoritism, and burdensome regulations. He vowed to work with states and territories to cut red tape and get households connected quickly at the lowest cost possible. Last June, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, or NTIA, which oversees the approval of BEAD proposals, released a policy notice outlining restructuring for the program and creating new delays. An audit by the Government Accountability Office later found the move had violated the Congressional Review Act by failing to approve the charges with Congress, but the agency has since walked back the charges. It gave states until September to comply with the changes and committed to reviewing all final proposals within 90 days of submission. But more than 7 months since Illinois submitted its final proposal, the review is still not complete. California is the only other state or territory that still has not received approval, according to NTIA's BEAD Progress Dashboard. At this point, it seems unusual and targeted that the U.S. Department of Commerce had the capacity to complete in-depth reviews and approvals for every single state except for Illinois and California, Pritzker wrote in his letter to Lutnick. Illinois families and businesses in rural areas are the ones paying the price. And if you happen to know the McMillans, Michael and Mary Donaldson McMillan, they recently celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary last week. The couple were married May 8, 1976, in Falls Church, Virginia, by Monsignor James McMurtry. Mary retired as an elementary school librarian, and Michael retired as an architect. They have two children, Elizabeth Schallenberger, whose husband is Adam of Champaign, and Megan Harris, whose husband is James of Warrenville, and they have three grandchildren. Happy 50th anniversary. I'm Kim Harden, and this concludes part one of the News Gazette for Wednesday, May 13th, 2026. I'll take a short break and then we'll be back with part two. I hope you're having a great day.